The Battle of Helm's Deep was one of the most decisive in the War of the Ring, but it was very different in the books to what happened in the films. Let's take a look. Hi everyone, this is Robert. Welcome to In Deep Geek. On this channel, we cover the Lord of the Rings in nerdy detail, as well as other great fantasy worlds like A Song of Ice and Fire and The Witcher. Welcome. This is the third in a series of videos breaking down what happened in the War of the Ring, the conflict that was raging in the background and sometimes foreground of the main action in The Lord of the Rings. Last time, we looked at Saruman's plan, which started out quite strongly with the two battles of the Fords of Isen. Today, we get to the Battle of Helm's Deep, one of the most epic moments in the Lord of the Rings film trilogy, and indeed in cinematic history, a 40-minute-long battle scene often considered one of the finest committed to celluloid. While the overall shape of the battle and several of the details are the same in the books, there are a lot of changes to work through. Most will be apparent as we go through the video, but let's quickly address two of them first, starting with the name of the battle itself. We mostly refer to it as the Battle of Helm's Deep, but in the books it is more often referred to as the Battle of the Hornburg. I'll use them interchangeably in this video. To be clear, in case you are wondering, Helm's Deep is technically the valley or gorge in which the battle took place, and the Hornburg is the actual fortress the Rohirrim were defending. Second, the change that probably discombobulated most book fans was the arrival of the elves in the films to fight alongside the Rohirrim. The elves don't appear at all in this battle in the books. In fact, this and the later Battle of the Pelennor Fields are thematically important moments in marking the turning point in Middle-earth history, from elvish primacy to the dominion of man, where humans can now go toe-to-toe with armies of orcs without their elf allies. Yes, Legolas was there, and Gandalf made a significant intervention, as did the Huorns, but you get the point. This is humanity standing firm and showing their mettle. All that said, let's get into the build-up to the battle itself. You'll remember from last time that Saruman had dispatched pretty much his entire army, over 10,000 orcs, half-orcs and Dunlendings, to subdue Rohan. Over two battles at the fords of the River Isen, he had managed to kill Theoden's son Theodred and claim the strategically important fords themselves. The Rohirrim, who had been defeated there, were scattered, although a significant number, up to perhaps 1,000, stayed under the command of Grimbold and Elfhelm. You may remember them from the last video. To tie this into the wider narrative, by this point Gandalf had freed Theoden from his bondage to Grima and was now darting around Western Rohan at ludicrous speed on Shadowfax trying to rally the defences of the realm. He met these survivors of the two battles of the Fords of Isen, instructed Elfhelm to bury the dead, then head back to fortify Edoras, because Theoden and what remained of the forces there had just left there. Grimbold and his forces he sent to the Hornburg to report to Erkenbrand, the new commander of the Westmark. We'll pick up on them later because they will play an important role in the battle. The newly invigorated Theoden, along with Aragorn, Gimli and Legolas and all the Rohirrim he could spare, were meanwhile heading northwest from Edoras to the Fords of Isen. He just heard that his kingdom was being invaded by Saruman's forces, so it's the obvious direction to head in. However, as you can see from the map, that takes them past Helm's Deep, and they are intercepted en route by reports of the losses at the Fords of Isen. Gandalf counsels a tactical sideways move to Helm's Deep, meaning that Theoden et al. Arrive there before Saruman's forces. Because, yes, Saruman's army was pushing on into Rohan. Now, I suppose they could have pushed on straight to Edoras. It was the capital, and therefore symbolically important, but that would leave them open to an attack from the rear by the forces of Helm's Deep, so they took the pragmatic approach of trying to first take out that fortress before advancing further. So the situation is this. Erkenbrand had assumed control of the West March and dug into the most defendable castle there after hearing about consecutive defeats at the Fords of Isen. He doesn't have long, but he calls the banners, stockpiling food, repairing walls, and establishing defensive protocols. Basically, he does exactly what you would want a commander of a castle soon to be attacked to do, a solid, professional job. He then leaves the garrison there and heads out into the Westfold to gather more forces. Theoden and his cohort, including Aragorn, Gimli, and Legolas, arrive soon after and reinforce the castle, missing Erkenbrand on the way. Contrary to the film, Theoden here was leading a group of soldiers, not the weak and vulnerable of Rohan. That made for good cinema, but in the books this was very much a military force, while everyone else stayed at home. Hence Gandalf sending Elfhelm's cohort back to Edoras to fortify that. If you're trying to keep track of Gandalf's movements during these few days, then just remember that he's on Shadowfax and not really resting much, and therefore moving several times faster than any of these armies. He's working at a frantic pace here. Anyway, at this point we should probably look at some of the geography and history of the Hornburg and Helm's Deep, where the battle will take place. The fortress itself was not built by the Rohirrim, but by the Gondorians, probably nearly 3,000 years earlier, when they still had Numenorean technology. It is a fortress nestled into the mountainside at the opening of a deep valley or gorge known as Helm's Deep, after Helm Hammerhand, a legendary king of Rohan who held out there against the Dunlendings through a long winter. In fact, a lot of the topography of that valley is named after him. For example, one of the valley's defences is Helm's Dyke, an earthen wall across the gorge, and Helm's Gate, you get the idea. The Deeping Wall, a high stone wall, spans the entrance to the gorge, ending with the Hornburg itself, a fearsome fortress. All that protects the deep itself, the gorge which holds the glittering caves, later the wondrous province of Gimli the Dwarf, but mostly used by the Rohirrim as another fallback area. Basically, this is a pinch point, minimising the advantages of a larger attacking force with a series of strong defences the defenders can fall back to in turn if needed. First, the earthworks of Helm's Dyke, then the Deeping Wall, then the Hornburg itself and the glittering caves deeper in the gorge. For those who know it, Tolkien said that his inspiration for the general geography here was the caves at the end of Cheddar Gorge in the southwest of England. Impressive stuff. In terms of numbers, the garrison at the Hornburg seems to have been around 1,000, and Théoden brought another 1,000. Facing them, arriving during the night of March the 3rd, Saruman's army consisted of more than 10,000 Uruk-hai and Dunlendings. They started their attack immediately. They broke through the outer earthworks defence, Helm's Dyke, easily, then proceeded to assault the Hornburg itself, focusing first on the main gate, often a weak point in castles. They brought forth a battering ram, but Aragorn, Éomer, Gimli and some others snuck out via a postern gate and scattered those attackers. Next, they started assaulting the Deeping Wall that ran right across the valley entrance, throwing ladders up, hundreds of them, we're told, but they again were repelled. It was around this point in the battle that Legolas and Gimli made that bet about who can kill the most orcs. Legolas had quite the head start at that point, using his bow to shoot down enemies from afar, whereas only a few had so far come within reach of Gimli's axe. So, at that point, only a few hours into the battle, which had taken place entirely at night time, the defences were holding up pretty well. But then Saruman's forces found a way through. A culvert allowing a stream to pass under the Deeping Wall. They pushed through while Rohan's soldiers were focusing on defending the top of the wall, with Gimli using all his dwarfy engineering skills to rapidly block up the culvert after them. Then there was a temporary pause where Gimli and Legolas could compare their counts. Gimli was now up to 21, with Legolas at 24. But then an explosion from that culvert. We read, "There came a blare of trumpets. Then there was a crash and a flash of flame and smoke. The waters of the Deeping Stream poured out hissing and foaming. They were choked no longer. A gaping hole was blasted in the wall. A host of dark shapes poured in. 'Devilry of Saruman,' cried Aragorn. 'They have crept in the culvert again while we talked, and they have lit the fire of Orthanc beneath our feet. Elendil! Elendil!' he shouted as he leaped down into the breach. But even as he did so, 100 ladders were raised against the battlements. Over the wall and under the wall, the last assault came sweeping like a dark wave upon a hill of sand. The defence was swept away." This was a turning point, because the defenders could no longer hope to hold the wall. Orcs and Dunlendings came rushing through, and the Rohirrim forces were split in two, each part retreating to somewhere more easily defended. Gimli, Éomer, and some others took refuge in the caves in the walls of the gorge, holding out heroically for some time. Aragorn and Legolas joined Théoden in the Hornburg itself. It was a formidable stronghold, and we're told several times that it had never been taken. But Saruman's forces had magical gunpowder, or whatever that had been, that had blasted a hole in the wall, and Théoden had itchy feet. He was the leader of a cavalry culture, not a people who cowered behind walls. At which point, events move very quickly. Théoden decides to go on the offensive when day breaks, get on his horse and charge out of the Hornburg and through the enemy's lines. Aragorn has also been waiting for the dawn, clearly sensing things might change then. We should note that whereas in the films Gandalf is clear that he will return at a certain time with aid, he doesn't in the books, simply saying that he would come, but not saying when. So what Théoden and Aragorn both do next is not based on the knowledge of a relief force arriving imminently, but a knowledge that the castle would probably soon fall, and at best a hope or a feeling that help might come with the light. Théoden went off to prepare himself and his men for a last heroic charge out of the fortress, while Aragorn leans out over the gate and starts chatting with the Uruk-hai outside, warning them that none knows what the new day shall bring him, and that if they didn't depart, they would all die. This seems to be a sort of light precognition by Aragorn, and it's not the only time. He much earlier warned Gandalf about his peril if he entered the mines of Moria. Aragorn is low-key magical throughout this story. The Uruk-hai, of course, laugh at him, and no sooner had he jumped back down than there was a roar and a blast of fire. The archway of the gate above which he had stood a moment before crumbled and crashed in smoke and dust. The barricade was scattered as if by a thunderbolt. It's that magical gunpowder again. The orcs were about to charge through when the great horn, Helm's horn, was sounded, and Théoden and his men charged out of the fortress on horseback, cutting right through the attacking army, all the way through to the other side, where they paused and took stock. By this point, daylight has well and truly arrived, so they can finally see properly what is going on, and it's something remarkable. The land had changed. Where before the green dale had lain, its grassy slopes lapping the ever-mounting hills, there now a forest loomed. Great trees, bare and silent, stood rank on rank with tangled bough and hoary head. Their twisted roots were buried in the long green grass. Darkness was under them. Between the dyke and the eaves of that nameless wood, only two open furlongs lay. There now cowered the proud hosts of Saruman, in terror of the king and in terror of the trees. They streamed down from Helm's Gate until all above the dyke was empty of them, but below it they were packed like swarming flies. Vainly they crawled and clambered about the walls of the coombe, seeking to escape. Where once had been a valley floor, now there was a forest. These are Huons. We're not told exactly what they are, but Merry speculates that they are Ents that have become more tree-like or less sentient in some way, and that sounds about right. They had been in Fangorn Forest, presumably just largely living like trees, but had been roused by Treebeard to take part in the attack on Isengard earlier that day, and he seems to have sent them on to finish off Saruman's forces at Helm's Deep. We don't know all their powers, but there are clearly a lot of them, and the orcs and Dunlendings are rather scared of them, rightly so, as it turns out, because at the same time, this happens. There, suddenly upon a ridge, appeared a rider, clad in white, shining in the rising sun. Over the low hills, the horns were sounding. Behind him, hastening down the long slopes, were 1,000 men on foot. Their swords were in their hands. Amid them strode a man, tall and strong. His shield was red. As he came to the valley's brink, he set to his lips a great black horn and blew a ringing blast. It is Erkenbrand, with the reinforcements he went to get, 1,000 men or more, and Gandalf. This force, and Théoden's, seized the initiative and attacked. The orcs panicked and scattered into the forest, killed by the Huons. Or, as Tolkien rather more poetically puts it, wailing they passed under the waiting shadow of the trees, and from that shadow none ever came again. The Dunlendings just threw down their weapons and surrendered. Théoden's men had seemed just minutes or hours from destruction, but with the help of reinforcements arriving just in the nick of time, it became a famous victory. The Dunlendings were shown clemency by Théoden and allowed to return home, providing they promised to stay on their side of the River Isen from then on. The dead orcs were placed in a mound on the valley floor, and that night the Huons disappeared, presumably back to Fangorn, leaving a new hill where the orc bodies had been, the Death Down. No grass ever grew there again. But most importantly, Rohan had been saved. Gandalf, Théoden and the others set out as soon as they could to first confront Saruman, whose war was now over less than 2 weeks after he'd first sent his army out into the field. Gandalf, with his new authority as Gandalf the White, cast Saruman from his order, breaking his staff, and instructed Treebeard to keep him under house arrest in the Tower of Orthanc. We will come back to Saruman right at the very end of this series, because he does have a role to play in the final battle of this war. The Battle of Helm's Deep was a turning point in the war. For a time it had looked like Saruman might take control of Rohan, but now Rohan was free to come to the aid of its ally Gondor when Sauron launched his attack there. Minas Tirith could have been isolated and alone, but it now had allies who would arrive just in time in the next battle we will look at in this series, the Siege of Gondor and the Battle of the Pelennor Fields. If you'd like to see more videos in this series diving deep into the War of the Ring, there's a link to my playlist on the left of your screen now. Or to watch other Lord of the Rings videos, there's a link in the middle of your screen. That's all for this time. Thanks for watching. I'll see you again soon.